What I want to talk about today is basically the so-called teleology, or maybe, you know, non-teleology, and the motion of a Schwarzschild black hole that's disturbed by an orbiting companion, so a tidally perturbed Schwarzschild black hole. So basically, you know, we have the usual story. You have your space-time metric, and the physical metric of the binary is perturbatively expanded like this, where your background is given by Schwarzschild, and you have your perturbation on top, and, you know, I'm showing up to second order. What can we say about the horizon? Well, the horizon's radial profile, its location, is similarly also expanded perturbatively, and you get something that looks like this. So over the course of our work, we've been looking at properties and finding the location, you know, of this perturbed black hole up to second order. But what I want to do is take a step back and look at things at first order. And, oh, sorry, I should probably, there we go, maybe that's a little bit better. You know, take a step back and look at things at first order and examine what, you know, maybe was not so well understood as well as we thought at first order. So basically, just, you know, to refresh your memories, an event horizon is the boundary of a region that's, you know, that's disconnected from future null infinity. And basically a defining feature of a black hole is that it's causally disconnected, I should say. A defining feature is that it's intrinsically, you know, what's it to be teleological, and that its location is determined by the entire future history of the universe. It's not a locally defined quantity on a slice, it's sort of a globally defined thing. So an apparent horizon, in contrast, offers an alternative characterization, and it's a true surface that's locally identifiable by quantities on that slice. So what we can say is that the expansion of null vectors is given by zero. So the expansion of your congruence of null geodesics. So basically what we can say also about an apparent horizon is that it always coincides with the event horizon, or that it lies entirely inside the black hole. But the converse is never true, right? So it always either coincides or lies inside. So sort of differences, contrasting, comparing have been looked at a lot in numerical relativity literature, but the differences are not as well studied in perturbation theory. And at least as far as I know, the apparent horizon has not been studied for inspiros as in the Emmert case. And that's what we're interested in this conference, right? So basically what I want to say at first order is that if we consider the event horizon, you know, just by virtue of orthogonality of your null vectors, you get this sort of evolution equation. So I want to jump through the details, and basically this evolution equation contains this Capernaum quantity, which is just the surface gravity of an unperturbed black hole. And it tells you, you know, how this radial profile evolves. So solving this, you get this so-called teleological solution, right? This future dependent solution. If you look at this integral, we're going from some time v to infinity. And what you'll notice as well is that there's this exponential factor. So this exponential sort of term suppresses this effect, this future dependence. And fortunately, what we can do is, if you're working in a two time scale expansion, as we've done, is that you can find that over the course of an inspiral, at least far away from plunge, before the plunging transition phase, that this sort of solution can be temporally localized in time. So what we get is that in a two time scale expansion, this HVV, this component of the metric perturbation, contains slowly varying amplitudes, that's this here, and it contains rapidly oscillating phases. So together, what it does is that it gives this kind of, you know, these effects sort of conspire together, and you get this kind of term, which is more manageable than this teleological solution, where omega is just, you know, the orbital frequencies. So moving on then, what can we say about the apparent horizon at first order? Well, for the apparent horizon, I said we can locate it using the expansion, setting that to zero. That the expansion is set to zero. And what we do is we set the expansion to zero order by order. And at first order, what we find is, you know, you decompose into your harmonic modes, and you find that the radial profile is given by something that looks like this. So the detail isn't really what I want to stress. I just want to say that, you know, it's something that looks a bit different from what you have for the event horizon. Lambda is just L plus one. So just keeping this in mind, what do we find? Well, comparing the event horizon and the apparent horizon, it is actually a well-known fact that the expansion scalar at first order is zero for an event horizon as well. So why didn't I mention that before? Well, you know, in the most general senses, it's not really a defining feature. There are some caveats, at least in the two timescale expansion that sets up our formalism. You want to be at times at least, you know, one radiation reaction time before plunge. And also this holds for, this holds not in the most general cases, but for a tidally perturbed black hole, it does, right? So for matter falling in through the horizon, this wouldn't hold. You'd have, you know, stress energy terms in that end. So, but anyway, perhaps not surprisingly then, for our context then, that the event horizon and the apparent horizon are identical at first order. So who cares? Why is this interesting? Well, I was saying that the event horizon is teleological, while the apparent horizon is not. The apparent horizon is locally defined. Well, if they're identical, then how can this be? However, teleological effects, you know, are discussed in the literature as being observed for perturbed event horizons. So what do I mean by that? Well, you can visualize the event horizon, you know, give some kind of depiction of what it looks like when it's being tidally perturbed. And the sort of the embeddings that are done to go from your space-time manifold to Euclidean space have been discussed in, for instance, Hartle. I believe he was the first to discuss this in the 70s. Parabolic encounters have been looked at. So that's Vega, Poisson et al, 2011. And also more relevant to us, perhaps Emery scenarios. And that's what's been looked at more recently by O'Sullivan, Hughes, and Penna, 2014 to 17. So what's common to all of these, what's common in the literature, is that what you do is you construct a closed two service in your Euclidean three space to embed your horizon. And what you do is you demand that the surface has the same intrinsic curvature as the horizon. And what you end up finding going through these steps is that the radial profile looks something like this. So you have your unperturbed black hole, Schwarzschild black hole, given by a radius of 2m, and then you have this first order correction, where this curly R is just first order Ricci scalar, and 2d and omega is again your orbital frequency. So what we've done, and what's different, what's a bit noteworthy, is that we've modified the typical embedding that you use. So the typical embedding would look like this term without the addition of this XBH. So what's XBH? Well, that's just the sort of the coordinate center of the black hole. So by including this term, what we've effectively done is provide a uniform translation of the black hole. And by doing this, we can look at the motion. So we're not affecting the shape of this perturbed black hole. We're just looking at the motion. So what happens? Well, if you compare on the left and on the right, I have some plots for you for R equals 7 of the orbiting companion away from the Schwarzschild black hole and at a distance of R naught equals 25. So what you'll see is that in this dashed line here, I'm showing the position of the orbiting companion. And this is at some time V0. And then, you know, just to see one orbital period where, you know, dividing this time 2 pi over the orbital frequency. What you'll see is this dashed line shows where the horizon is most deformed. So this is what's typically called the tidal bulge of the horizon. So you have your orbiting companion over here. We're going around counterclockwise, but it seems that there's this constant lead angle. So the bulge seems to lead the orbiting companion at every instant. So this is interesting. And what I've done is we've also scaled the L greater than zero modes by a factor of 200, just to really exaggerate the effect, just to show you visually what's going on. I mean, the effect is really small. What I'm doing in the small circuit is I'm just tracing the motion of the geometric center of the black hole as it moves around in this circle over one period. So this lead is interesting, right? And this tidal bulge has been, you know, described in terms of teleological arguments. So you'll see, you know, many times in the literature, and these are mainly the same citations that I gave before, that in the literature they say that this tidal lead is due to the teleological nature of the event horizon, that it anticipates the companion's future location, that it effectively rearranges itself in anticipation of the gravitational stresses it's about to to experience in the future. And this may seem very counterintuitive. What they usually say also is that this lead is, so this lead angle is given by a time of order one over a Kappa naught, where Kappa naught again was the unperturbed Schwarzschild black hole's surface gravity.
2 minutes.
Oh, okay. So I'll speed up now. So the explanation cannot be wholly correct. And why is that? Well, that's because I stress that the event horizon and the apparent horizon at first order are identical. So then what can we say? Well, the rodeo profiles were the same. If you have an event horizon on some constant slice of V, then it's completely determined by information on that slice. So how can it be future determined, right? So the way you think about this is that you say, well, imagine my particle is here, right? And what you think, how you think of this is that you say the particle doesn't pull the black hole towards itself like it would a fluid body, which is perhaps where we get our intuition from. Instead, it repels the horizon. It's effectively, if you have a particle down here where the dashed line is, it's making it easier for objects, let's say, for instance, for light to escape. So it's deforming the black hole in a way that makes it easier for objects to escape. So, you know, it's not exactly intuitive, but this is, you know, this is something that you can think about. And well, you might say then, well, why is it lagging in that case? Well, you know, the propagation of for instance, for light in extremely curved spacetimes is not immediately trivial. And, you know, there are some complications, but imagine it as repelling the apparent horizon rather than pulling it towards it. So I probably won't have time to go through this, but basically there's paradox, Zeno's paradox of the arrow, which is another way to sort of try to make sense of this. And basically what this paradox says is, imagine firing an arrow and you take a snapshot in time and you look at that arrow and you say, okay, at some instant of time, what can I determine about the motion of this arrow? Well, it's not moving to where it is because it's already there. And it's not moving to where it isn't because that would require time to elapse. So in some way we can reconcile this teleological behavior with this kind of thought, in that we know that the event horizon, or indeed the apparent horizon at first order, requires knowledge of the null vectors on that slice. So these null tangent vectors at some given time V give us some weak information about the future. So we know where these null curves are heading by virtue of knowing the velocities. So what was previously thought to be this lead time of 1 over kappa, you know, in this equation that I showed before, this ODE, you know, what was thought of as purely arising from this teleological effect is actually more considered to be coming from the null vector at a given instant. So the key here is at an instant. So this paradox can be resolved in the same way that, you know, the so-called Zeno's paradox is resolved, that these tangent vectors that we have knowledge of, are properties of the system at a given instant. They're not properties at multiple instants, and they're not properties of the system in the future. So, well, that was a bit rushed, but that's really all I have for you right now. And just to sum up, what we've done is we've extended the literature by including black hole motion. So in previous literature, you'll find, you know, the shape very nicely depicted, but there's not much mention of the motion of the black hole. And in a binary, to have faithful representation, you really want to see how, you know, how things are moving about the center of mass of the binary. We've also provided non-teleological arguments for this tidal lead, and details on second order calculations will be coming soon. And for now, I'll just say that, you know, once we have the necessary modes that we would require to do this visualization at second order, then perhaps we could do that as well. So thanks very much for your attention. Whoops.
Thank you, Zaid. We may have time for one quick question.
Well, if there are no questions, I'll show one thing that I omitted, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay, so, you know, we did these 2D visualizations, and one thing I skipped over because, you know, it really doesn't tie in is these 3D plots. So, you know, they look nice, but, you know, as a wise man once said, and I'm pointing to Adam here, you know, we're really just showing an egg shape. I mean, what can I tell you? It's... Yeah, so you see this this depression that I was talking about, this sort of compression of the black hole in violet, and you see this elongation in red. But you know, without information of, you know, the location, it's not really as descriptive as the 2D plots.